We are going to Mark chapter 6. How many of you are continuing to be blessed by the weekly readings? I'm just curious. I am just like swimming. Honestly, no kidding, just like swimming in God. This is just so powerful going through the Bible this way. I am loving it. Like I don't know about you, but I'm finding myself like, I don't really want to watch TV. I'd rather go read. Like, honestly, it's just so good. And so I was praying about where to go. And of course, I take notes as I read through on a daily basis, and mark passages that jump out at me. And so I was kind of going back through and looking from this past week. And Monday jumped out at me. Monday morning, I was eating breakfast, and I had read Mark chapter 6 on Monday morning. And it really jumped out at me. And if you will permit a bit of a personal story, it really, really jumped out at me. Because Sunday night, I had had a phone conversation with a friend, and just a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on, storms, and praying about it all and thinking about it all and processing it all. And Monday morning, I opened this up and I was eating breakfast and I read this chapter and I got to this passage that John read a moment ago. And when I got to verse 50, where Jesus says, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid," I just wept. I wept and I leaned down and I kissed the Bible. And I was reminded that God is in control and that He loves us dearly. And sometimes, well, I'm preaching ahead. Anyway, so this passage, as I went back and looked, that just jumped at me. So that's where I want to go. Starting with verse 45. It says, immediately, okay, which is like Mark's favorite word. If you've been reading through Mark, you've noticed by now that immediately is Mark's favorite word. Mark is an action guy. Like, you know, he these action movies, like that would be Mark, I guess. But anyway, he likes action. And he says, immediately, he made his disciples get into the boat. Well, what had just happened that preceded this immediately? What had just happened, if you go back and read the rest of chapter 6, Jesus had just fed 5,000 men. Now, it says 5,000 men, which means in all likelihood, there's a good possibility that it was at least 15,000 people, because if you count wives and one child per family, which seems ludicrous in the first century, to even do that, you're talking about probably 15,000 people at least, and Jesus had just fed them all with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And so immediately following this, it says he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he sent the multitude away. Huge miracle. Massive miracle, one of the most famous miracles of Jesus' earthly ministry. And his immediate reaction following this miracle is, get everybody out of here. What seems odd? Why not let everybody hang around? Why not bask in that a little bit and let people think about that a little bit? When I think, here's why. If Jesus had let the multitude hang around and think about it for a little bit, they would have probably wanted to make him king right then and there. Hey, this guy can like create food out of nothing. We're in good shape. We're going to keep this guy under wraps, okay? And that was not why Jesus had come, and he knew it, okay? And so his immediate reaction was, I don't want glory to come to me, because the glory is supposed to go to the Father, so get everybody out of here. Have you ever come off of an incredible moment with God or an incredible move with God, a spiritual high, and immediately, see, I've been reading Mark, immediately you get undercut by something. Just like, whoo! What, where'd that come from? See, Jesus knew. Jesus knows the enemy. He knows that's Satan's tactic. And so as soon as this miracle has happened, he gets everybody out of there. Sends the multitude away, sends the disciples in the boat to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and he, it says in verse 46, and when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. Now when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Immediately following this massive move of God, Jesus sent everybody away, got away from everybody, got up on the mountain with the Father alone, and was in prayer. Huge example for us as to how we need to walk with the Lord. Let the glory be to him, and when he has used us in a mighty way, get alone with him. Get alone with him and pray. Lest pride get some kind of a foothold. So he sends everybody away, and he is alone on the mountain. Now, I'll tell you something else. If you go back and read the rest of Mark chapter 6, there was a reason that Jesus wanted to be alone. Because if you go back and read the rest of Mark chapter 6, what had just happened is probably very shortly before Jesus fed the 5,000, he had gotten word of the fact that King Herod had beheaded his cousin, John the Baptist, in prison. Now, we don't have a whole lot of insight into the relationship between Jesus and John the Baptist, but we know that they had one. And I think we can assume, without violating Scripture, that it was probably pretty tight. Nobody else knew who Jesus was, practically, except John. John was the forerunner. John was the one who baptized Jesus. They were cousins. It's pretty likely that they spent feasts together growing up and all kinds of other things. I'm going to bet Jesus and John were tight. One of his dearest friends. And he just learned that he had been killed, murdered, for standing up for the truth. And he had tried, actually, to get away when he heard that. The disciples had been out on a mission trip. They had come back to him. They had told him what they had done. And he had told them, let's go away to a deserted place so you can rest. But the people saw him going there, and they got there before he did. And so when he got there, he saw the multitudes, and it says he was moved with compassion. In other words, even though Jesus himself was suffering emotionally, he saw a bigger picture. And there's a lesson in that for us too. Because there's going to be times in our lives where all we want to do is crawl in a hole somewhere in the fetal position and cry. Right? Anybody there? Anybody been there? Yeah? Okay. And yet, in the midst of that, oftentimes in the midst of that, God will tap us on the shoulder, not shove us. He'll tap us on the shoulder and say, child, this one over here needs help. And it's amazing in the midst of helping others how much we can be healed ourselves. But Jesus was now utterly exhausted. And he wanted to be alone, to get away from the crowds and to be able to grieve for John and just to be able to be with the Father. And so he was alone. He had sent the multitudes away. He'd sent the disciples to the other side, and he was alone. And in verse 48, it says, then he saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them.
He's up on the mountain. He can see the Sea of Galilee, and he sees his disciples struggling against the wind because the wind on the Sea of Galilee, see, the Sea of Galilee is almost like a funnel. The mountains that surround the hills and the mountains that surround the Sea of Galilee is almost like a funnel, and the wind can come through there sometimes violently. And one of these windstorms had apparently kicked up, and the disciples are rowing, which means if they had a sail, they didn't want to use it because the wind was too strong. And so they're rowing against the wind to try to get to the other side where Jesus told them to go. Now, I want you to remember that Jesus is God. And in all likelihood, he knew that that windstorm was going to kick up. And he sent the disciples right into the middle of it. Well, that doesn't sound very nice. Well, at first glance, it doesn't. But if the disciples had not been sent into the middle of that windstorm, they would not have experienced, and we would not have recorded for us, one of the most amazing examples of the power of God. So here they are, in the middle of this storm that Jesus sent them into. Straining as hard as they can, rowing. They are trying to solve a problem that they are in the middle of naturally. With those oars, just hard, stroke. Just as hard as they possibly can, and it's not working. Well, they keep on trying, but it keeps on not working. Because it says, when evening came, they were in the middle of the sea. But then it says, now about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them. Now the fourth watch of the night is somewhere between 3 and 4 a.m. Evening starts at 6 p.m. So for 8 or 9 hours, the disciples had been rowing trying to get to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. They have been in the middle of this storm for a good long while, and they are exhausted. Can I get an amen? They are worn out. And they have no idea how they're going to get to the other side of this sea and how they're going to get out of this storm. And then about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them. Now, there's something about the fourth watch of the night. It's between 3 and 4 in the morning. And I have heard it said, when you are out alone, if you're out alone outside, spending the night somewhere, 3 o'clock is the hardest time to get through. Because all the warmth from the previous day's sunshine is now gone. And it is utterly dark. And you are smack dab between midnight and dawn. So there's really no turning back, and there's no rushing forward. You are just there. And there's nothing you can do about it. As much as you want to, you can't make the sun rise any faster. And between 3 and 4 in the morning is the hardest time if you're in a survival situation to make it. To keep your hope up. And it's there. In the midst of a storm that they are utterly exhausted by, at the very lowest point in the middle of that storm, where some of them are probably tempted to throw the oars into the sea and say, forget it. He came to them. Then, in that moment, Jesus came to them. Now, I was reading some commentary on this morning, and I thought it was really good. Matthew Henry brought up the point that he did not send an angel, nor did he just speak to the wind from the mountainside. Oh, he sure could have. He could have sent Gabriel or Michael or whoever, all those angels, we don't know their names. I wonder if they ever get mad about that. Like, everybody knows Gabriel and everybody knows Michael and nobody else. But he could have sent an angel. He certainly could have, from the mountainside, just looked down at that sea and said, wind, psh. But he didn't. He, Jesus himself, came to the disciples at that point. Why? Because he loves them. And the most personal thing that he can do is to come to them himself. And so that is what he does. And do you know that that is what he still does? He comes to us himself. Because with Jesus, it's personal. He comes to them. But he doesn't come swimming. And he doesn't come in another boat. It says he came to them walking on the sea. Why? Because he owns it. He owns it. It belongs to him. If he wants to walk on it, that's his business. He can do that. Brothers and sisters, let me remind you this morning, whatever storm it is that seems to be tossing you around, Jesus owns it. He owns it. Satan doesn't own that storm. Jesus owns it. And he is on top of it. You are in the middle of it. He is on top of it. See, look what happens here. It says, he comes walking on the sea and would have passed them by. It's one of the most hilarious things in all the Bible. Think about it. Okay? Here's Zita. Okay? Here's Zita and Sarah, and they're in the boat, and they're rowing, and they're trying to get to shore. And here's Jesus walking. Hey. I mean... It's so funny to think about that. It's, hey, guys, what's up? But here he comes walking, and he would have passed by them. Why? Because he's making progress. They're stuck. They're rowing. They're not going anywhere. He's making progress because he's above the wind. He controls the wind. He's just walking on the sea. He's out for a stroll, and he is actually going somewhere, and they're stuck in the middle of it, not going anywhere. Hey, guys. It's hilarious. But yet in the midst of that just absolutely hilarious picture, there's a profound lesson to be learned for us, and that is this. The disciples were trying to solve a problem with a natural solution, oars. Jesus was showing them how to solve a problem with a spiritual solution, faith. You guys been fighting this for 8 or 9 hours with those blocks of wood. Look, this is how you do it, guys. Solve problems spiritually. He's making progress because he is walking. Spiritual oars. Yeah, spiritual oars. Thank you, Mandy. Spiritual oars. Feet. He's walking by faith on the water, on top of the storm, and he is actually going somewhere. He is making progress. He is getting through the storm, not stuck in the middle of it. But look at what happens. Somebody asked me about this a week or two ago. So, what was up with you talking about God being the lion and, you know, being afraid of God and him, like, running you down. Because I, you know, remember a couple weeks ago when I said that right before I got up and preached, talked about sometimes it looked like God's this fierce lion behind us and we're afraid, so we're running from him. Like, you know, somebody asked me, what was that about? I don't get that. Well, look at this. Look at this. In verse 49, it says, when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a what? A ghost. They saw Jesus, God, Son of God, walking on the water towards them. Now, you'd think if anybody would recognize Jesus, it would be the disciples. I mean, they literally live with him 24 hours a day. But they thought it was a ghost. Why? Because that's not where Jesus should be. Jesus is up on the mountain. Jesus isn't walking on the water, because that doesn't happen. It's a ghost. Now, remember, it's between three and four in the morning. It's the darkest part of the night, and it's in the middle of a storm. And so something shows up. Great, now we got a ghost. Naturally. This goes from bad to worse. Now, a couple of words about ghost. There are no such things. Okay, all right. Very important for us to know, especially as the people of God, there's no such thing as ghost. However, there most assuredly are such things as spirits, be they good or evil. And very often, evil spirits will take on the form of dead people in order to make people think that there are ghosts. All right? Bible says that when a man dies, he is immediately in the presence of God in heaven or in hell. There is no purgatory. Sorry, Ghostbusters are not needed. Demon caster outers are needed. But there are no such thing as ghosts. Okay, now we've cleared that up. So when the disciples mistake Jesus for a ghost, you know what they are really doing? They are mistaking Jesus for the enemy. The very ones that are with him all the time, walking with him 24 hours a day, in the midst of a storm, they mistake him for the enemy. Because that's not where he's supposed to be, they thought. But it was exactly where he was supposed to be, because he was showing them how to get through the storm. See, there's going to be times, as the people of God, that he lifts us right over the storm. We see a storm coming, and then all of a sudden, it's just whoosh, all gone. He does that. He does that. He's really good at that. He's also really good at getting us through storms. Scott Crepain had a song back in the mid-90s, called Sometimes He Calms the Storm. Does anybody remember that song? Just out of curiosity. Love that song. All right. It says, sometimes he calms the storm, and other times he calms his child. Because there will be times, like we looked at a couple weeks ago with Abraham, where it's through the storm that the Lord has something really, really important for us to know about us, and more importantly, about himself, about who he is. But they thought it was a ghost, and they cried out, they panicked, for they all saw him and were troubled. But immediately he talked with them and said to them, be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid.
What did he do to calm down his panicky kids? He spoke to them. And when they heard his voice, they recognized him. So what did he say? My sheep hear my voice. They know, my sheep know my voice. And Jesus spoke to them. And in speaking to them, they realized, they saw, that's Jesus standing out there on the sea. I have no reference point for that. I'm confused. But I think it's going to be okay now. I think it's going to be okay. Because that's Jesus. So it's going to be okay now. He spoke to them. And notice what he said. He said, be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid. I looked up what good cheer means. Be of good cheer. Because I don't know. It's like, you know, C-A-T-S. You know, what? Be of good cheer. What are we talking about? All right. Good cheer, if you look it up, it actually means to take courage. Take courage. All right, that's starting to make more sense. What is courage? Well, I've heard it said that John Wayne said that courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway, which I like pretty well. Like that pretty well. But as much as I love Mr. Wayne, he's not necessarily an English expert. So I looked it up in Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary to see what he said about courage. And Mr. Webster said that courage is bravery, intrepidity. Oh, no, I'm killing that. Anyway, bravery, this is the important part. That quality of mind which enables men to encounter danger and difficulties with firmness. Which is, in essence, what Mr. Wayne said. It's a little more eloquently. That quality of mind which enables men to encounter danger and difficulties with firmness, valor, boldness, courage. Mr. Webster goes on to make a little comment, which I think is worth us looking at. Courage that grows from constitution, in other words, courage that comes from how we're feeling at the moment, often forsakes a man when he has occasion for it. That kind of courage. You know, the courage that everybody has before the fight starts. Yeah, we're ready to go. Woo, yeah. And then the first shots get fired. And the kind of courage that is just built up on, woo-hoo, that doesn't last. Those guys turn tail and run. Courage which arises from a sense of duty acts in a uniform manner. Courage which arises from a sense of duty acts in a uniform manner. In other words, courage that is based on something more than how you feel. Courage that is based on this is right and this is wrong, and because this is right, I'm going to stand right here come hell or high water. And that kind of courage acts the same way all the time. Thus says Mr. Webster about courage. So Jesus says to the disciples, be of good cheer, take courage. Why? What is this courage based on? It is I. This storm that you're in the middle of, this place that you think you'll never get out of, I am right here. It is I. It is me. It's Jesus. You're going to be all right.
I'm going to get you through. It is I. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. You realize that's a command? Do not be afraid. It's not like optional. It's not like, you know, if you feel like being afraid, then no, that's okay. You know, if you don't want to be afraid, then that's okay too. No, Jesus tells them, do not be afraid. We, as the children of God, being afraid is not an option. Being afraid is sin against God, because He is God. Therefore, we have no reason to fear anything or anyone. It is I. Do not be afraid. In verse 51, it says, then he went up into the boat to them, and the wind ceased. Why? Well, they had learned what they needed to learn about who Jesus is. Therefore, it was time for the storm to be over. And the one who was in control of the storm was now in the boat with them. And see, Jesus has peace within himself. He is the Prince of Peace. Peace is part of who he is. It's not just something he possesses. It's part of who he is. And so when we let him in the boat, and we stop trying to solve problems naturally, and we start letting Him show us how to solve and walk through problems spiritually, then the wind ceases, because He brings peace. He gives peace, right? He said in John 14, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives. Do I give to you? Do not let your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. It says, and they were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure. What just happened? There was a storm, and then Jesus came walking on the water. And now the storm is gone and Jesus is in the boat. John, did you see that? I just want to be sure that I'm not going crazy. And John's like, yeah, Andrew, I saw that. I think. They were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure. They had no way to explain it. And it says, and they marveled. They marveled. It's time the people of God reclaim that word. Bunch of comic characters that are made up have no business using that word, because God alone does marvelous works. God alone. They marveled at who is this man. Why did they marvel? Because look at verse 52. Look what it says. It says, for they had not understood about the loaves because their heart was hardened. They passed the loaves out. Right? Jesus gave thanks. He broke them. He gave it to the disciples. Disciples gave it to the people. He kept giving it to the disciples, and they kept giving it to the people. He kept giving it to the disciples, and they kept giving it to the people, until 15,000 people had supper. And they were the ones that told Jesus, we have 5 loaves and 2 fish. And they were in on that entire process. And they didn't get it. They didn't realize what was happening. They're in the middle of one of the most amazing miracles ever, and they didn't even know it was taking place. Their heart was hardened. They did not understand about the loaves. See, before the storm, they did not understand who they were dealing with. But at the end of the storm, they had a much better picture of who they were dealing with. And they realized, or they began to realize, and it wouldn't be too far on down the line, that Peter would declare when Jesus said, "Who do men say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" And he would say, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And my very, very simple challenge and question this morning is, do we understand who it is that we are dealing with? Do we understand who it is, if we are the people of God, surrendered to Him who now lives in us? Or have we been guilty of thinking with natural minds like the disciples? Where are those areas in our lives where we still do not yet understand? Mom, you can come on up. Where are those areas in our lives that we do not yet understand that Jesus is the Son of God and that He is Lord over that too? That He's going to get us through that too. That we don't have to strain against the wind in our own strength, because God is going to get us through that too. Where are those areas? And listen, if you're here this morning and you do not know Jesus, you haven't surrendered your life to Jesus, then let me just tell you right now, every area is that area for you. You say, "Oh, I believe in Jesus." Listen, the demons believe in Jesus, okay? The demons know about more about Jesus than you or I ever will, probably this side of eternity. That doesn't help them one bit, because they don't trust Him. They're not surrendered to Him. I'm asking, are you surrendered to Jesus? Is He your Lord? Is He your Savior? Yours, not granddad's, not uncle's, not aunt's, not grandma's, yours. If He's not, He's worthy of it. He's worthy of it. And why don't you surrender to Him today and start letting Him show you just how many areas He is worthy of in your life? But church, truly this is a message for us more so than anybody else. Where have we not understood about the loaves? Where are we still straining against the wind? Where are we still maybe looking at a scenario and saying, "It's a ghost," when Jesus is looking at us and saying, "Take courage, it's Me. Don't be afraid." What's the Lord laying on your heart there? This altar call is really not about any great, I've sinned against heaven and against you. And this is not that. This is, "God, I didn't see. I didn't realize. But I see You now. And this thing, this area, I'm surrendering to You. Because I see that it's You. And I'm going to have courage. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm surrendering it to You. You take it. You get me through it. I'm going to trust You because You are worthy." That's my question this morning. So these altars are open. I'm going to pray. And And if you need to do some business like that with God, come on up. Come on up. That's what these altars are for. No one's going to think any less of you. Who cares if they do? That's their problem. Let God deal with that. You deal with you and God. Don't worry about everybody else. And we'll be up here for prayer of whatever needs there are, spiritual, physical, emotional. But let's hear the voice of Jesus this morning saying, be of good cheer, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Father, you're just so unbelievably good. Your mercy is beyond anything we know or can understand, comprehend. Throughout all of eternity, we won't comprehend it, but we're swimming in it. And Lord, I just pray that this morning you would open our eyes, all of our eyes, to those things, those points in our life that maybe it feels like it's 3:30 in the morning and wind is kicking and we've tried all we know and it's not working and this can't possibly be you. And it is. And you're wanting to show us that you can get us through the storm. Show us all those things, Lord, and help us this morning to lay them down and to trust you, because you are worthy of that trust. Thank you, Jesus. In your name, amen.